We want to thank you for being here this morning. Those that are visiting, we certainly appreciate you being with us, and we certainly invite you to be back with us anytime you possibly can. Nick is smiling much more today. I don't know why, but so is Pam. I know why she is, though, and we are thankful that God answered our prayers on the behalf of Maria, and we're thankful that both she and the baby are doing well, and hopefully Nathan's doing okay. So I'm sure he's suffering those things of parenthood all of a sudden. But he'll start thinking about those young men that'll be coming to date his daughter, and he'll already be agonizing over that. So, yeah. I know that Glendon is going to be very happy with the start of this lesson this morning. Now, as I get into it, he might not be so happy, because I know this is one of his favorite people in the Bible. Joseph is certainly a man that we can learn much from. When we think of people in the book of Genesis, we certainly, our minds would go back to Adam and Eve and Noah and his family, and we might even think back to Abraham and Isaac, Jacob. And all of those people were certainly people that we could look back to and learn many lessons from, as well as others, both good and bad lessons. But those folks, Sarah, they were good people. But I don't know where you've ever realized it or not, but more space, more time, more effort is given toward Joseph than any one in Genesis. And I'm certain that there's a reason for that. God doesn't make any mistakes. There's not one word of reproof written about Joseph, even though look at some things that he said and did, and we might think, well, those don't seem quite right necessarily. Nowhere does it say that God reproved him for those, but just because God doesn't say it doesn't mean that they could have been right or wrong. We've got to understand something, that when we look at the Bible, especially from Moses back, we need to understand that God was giving them rules. He was telling them what to do. They had choice in obeying that or not, and we've always talked about the fact that it seemed that at times, at least, he gave them to the heads of the families, and those men would then do those things, pass them on to their families, and their families were expected to do the same thing. But then we look at various people, and we think, well, how did they become so faithful to God, if you will, in such a difficult time? But what it should make us think about is, if we have all this revealed will of God, compared to them, what excuse do we have? I mean, you know, we could look at them and we could say, well, maybe they didn't understand some things because they didn't have it. But he's a man of character. He's a man that we could look at and think of as a man who certainly tried to keep his life pure from, we know from a fairly early age, a little bit about his life. He was a type of brother that you would want in your family. He was an example of a ruler that God would hold up in high esteem as one who was fair in what he did, and certainly tried to do what was best both for the people and for those that he served, both God and later on the Pharaoh. But when we look at this, we find that in the background of all of this, God had given him great ability and wisdom. We always think of Solomon, but we think of Joseph. It is amazing the wisdom this young man had. It makes you think he was already asking God for it at a very early age. But with all of that said, he had a choice in whether he used that or not. And he certainly was the type of young man, and a little bit later in his life, he certainly was the type of man that we could look at and say that was a man that had both faith and character, that he's a man we can look to. So, no, I'm not going to read Genesis 37:1 through Genesis 50:26. I put that up to show you how much is actually written about him. There's some things in between, but a lot of this is about Joseph. But when we look at this, we find that there's something unusual about Joseph. Due to no fault of his, certainly he was born to Jacob and Rachel. He didn't have a choice in this. It just so happened this was the case. Rachel had wanted to have children. We see that she had given her handmaids to Jacob, a handmaid to Jacob. She had children that way, if you will. But for the most part, he had had children through Leah, four sons, and then he had children through her handmaids as well. But he loved Rachel. He loved her tremendously, and he wanted to have a child, and so God blessed them with this child, Joseph. He was the firstborn of Rachel, but he was the 12th child of Jacob's. Because there was a daughter in there. I know you're shaking your head. There was only 12 sons, we know that. But it turns out that he was next to the last child that was born. So when we look at this, we find out that this was very important to Jacob in so many ways, and we'll talk about that later. But then Rachel and Jacob, or Israel, would have one more child together, and that child's name would be Benjamin. But Rachel, as we know, would die. They would be in Canaan near Bethel when this happened, and she would die giving birth to him. And, you know, she couldn't have been as young a woman as, if you think about it, she was not as young, obviously, as we might think. She was getting up in years, not as old as Sarah, but in giving childbirth, she ended up passing from this life. And, of course, you know, when we look at that, certainly this all affected Jacob very much. But now when we're looking at Joseph, we find that at 17 years old, we find that he was hated by his brothers. If you turn to the 37th chapter, we'll actually start in that chapter. We find that in verse 2 that he is 17 years old, and at 17 he's already hated by his brothers. His brothers absolutely despise this young man. We can find nothing that Joseph's done. Now you might say, well, didn't he go and give bad reports about his brother? Well, yes, he did. He reported bad things about his brothers. He let his father know. But I don't look at this in any way as he was a tattletale. He was very concerned about what his brothers were doing because it affected his father's business. And they were doing things that weren't right. And he did not like this at all. And he went and he told his father about the bad things that they were doing. And in the hopes that Jacob would maybe stop those things. But we see that for some reason, nothing's indicated that Jacob ever made any attempt to stop anything bad that was happening. It seems that he had a different concept of this, and it's not good leadership. And I just want to point this out briefly. If you're running a business somewhere and all you're wanting is someone to come and snitch and tell, you know, the bad things, but you don't ever do anything about them, you're putting both in jeopardy. Both the people and the one that you're asking to do this. And so there's nothing wrong in reporting something that's going bad. And he did that, and they didn't like him for it. But the thing they really didn't like was that Jacob showed favoritism. It says that clearly this son of his was loved by him. And it makes a point because he was a son of his old age. Now we might say, well, what about Benjamin? Well, yeah, you know, but it didn't mean as much to him. And it's like a firstborn. The whole situation with this is, the way Jacob was looking at this, in some respects, this is his firstborn with Rachel. This is the one he loves. This is the one that he shows favoritism to. Partiality. I told you Glenda's not going to like part of this lesson. He showed favoritism to. And he gave him a coat of many colors to prove that. I'm just kidding, Glenda, on his favoritism in the back. We won't mention who. But then, in addition to that, you know, sometimes God, if you will, helps things along. So he gave him two dreams. One was about the sheaves, and the sheaves of his brothers bowed down before his. Now the other one is about the fact that in this dream you have the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowing down to, he said, to me. Now Jacob took this to mean me, your mother, and your 11 brothers. Because he says that there are 11 of them, the 11 stars. Now, some people have looked at this and said, when was Benjamin born in all of this, and wasn't his mother already dead if that's the case? I'll just leave that to you. I can give you lots of stuff about it. That's not what the lesson's about today. But there's some evidence both ways that Benjamin had already been born, his mother had already passed away. But remember this, because in his family there was still Leah, he still had a mother. This was not the case of, it's just simply saying that Jacob took this to mean that Joseph was saying, all of us are going to come down and bow before you. Now, it's never reported, that Jacob or Leah ever bowed down before him. But in reality, we're going to see that they did in the figurative sense. They did bow down before him. But this created strife. And so his brothers even hated him even more. And they said, you know, not only this young man, here he is, his father loves him more than he does us, but he's this dreamer. You know, he's having these dreams and he thinks he's something he's not. And then they were very upset about this in verse 19. And they just wanted to do something about it. So his brothers end up selling him in slavery. This is not their first intent. Even though people make an argument about this and they'll say, well, they didn't really mean to kill him. They just wanted to scare him. And nothing says that in the Bible. Now, people make that argument, but it says that they actually wanted to take his life. You think that this doesn't affect people? Of course it affects people. And it had gotten to the point with them, and they're not very good young men in the first place. And some of them aren't so young anymore, but they just can't stand this. Well, you know, Reuben doesn't like this, and he tries to free him. And I'm putting the passages up as we go. I know this is not going to be available to those on the internet, but just understand this is Genesis 37 through Genesis 50. So he tries to free him. It doesn't work out. So then after he says, let's put him in this pit, and his intent is to come take him back out of the pit. Well, he leaves, and Judah comes along, and he sees these Ishmaelites coming along, and he says, hey, let's sell him to them. Now, what's interesting about this, I want you to think about the irony of all this. This is some of their kinfolks. This is Abraham's descendants through Ishmael that he sells them to. So Israel's son is being sold to Ishmael. What a thought process. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, that lineage, one of them is being sold to the other one. Well, what do they do with him? Well, they take him down and certainly sell him into slavery. But in the meantime, they go back to Jacob. They think they're going to cover this up. They take his coat. They put some animal's blood on it. And they take it back to him. And they said, look, we found this. Now, they don't say, we think he's dead or he's dead or anything like that. But they sure left it as if he's dead. And here's poor Jacob. And he looks at it and he says, my son's dead. And I'm not going to have him anymore. And it's pitiful the way they treat this. And he says, without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. And, of course, he mourned for some time over the fact that he believed that Joseph was dead. This is at 17 years old. But there's something I want to point out about this that people miss. Joseph is the only one of the brothers that it's reported is faithful to his father. He follows his father's command perfectly. When his father even, he knows he's in trouble with his brothers, but even in this instance, when he says, you go down and check on your brothers, he doesn't hesitate. He goes straight down there to check on them, knowing that they can't stand him. He does everything, to the best of our knowledge, that his father wants. And even when, you know, I love the way this says here. He says, are not your brothers, in verse 13, feeding the flock? Said, come, I will send you them. He said, well, here I am. And he said, please go and see. So he sent him, and he went. He didn't hesitate. He didn't question it. He did what his father asked. At 17 years old, he wasn't rebellious. He wasn't doing anything against his father's will. He was doing what his father wanted. But then now he goes down into slavery. He's in Potiphar's house. He's been sold to him. And Potiphar is going to be blessed by this, we're going to find out. So here he is in Potiphar's house in Genesis 39. And we see that with this, he's doing very well. It says he was a successful man. And the reason he was because of God. Now, God doesn't force people to accept other people, but he put such a good heart in Joseph. And Joseph, following his will, having this wisdom, did what he needed to do. Now, remember, he's still very young. He may be 17 or 18 years old at this point, somewhere in that range. But he proved he was a hard worker, that he was trustworthy, that he would do whatever Potiphar asked. He didn't sit and mourn and cry and whine and say, look, what a terrible situation this is. I've been put in this situation. I don't want to be here. Why does this happen to me? I'm not going to do well here. I don't like this. He could have done all of that. Instead, he accepted it and he said, this is my lot. I'm going to do what needs to be done. So even in the worst circumstances, he made the best of it. And what we find is, as a result, God blessed both him and Potiphar. Potiphar's house increased. Things went well. It was a wonderful situation having Joseph there to lead that household while Potiphar was gone. And he did it very well. But there's a problem. As with all things in life, you know, someone once pointed out, you know, it's the worst thing in the world is get you a nice piece of pie that you really like, and someone reach over and go, put their finger in and say, what kind of pie is that? It just takes something away from that pie. I don't care whose finger it is. You don't want any. Satan's always putting his finger in our pie. Here is a good situation. He's as best as can be for Joseph at this point. And what happens? Well, Potiphar's wife comes along and she looks at him. And he was handsome, it says in verse 6 of 39. He was handsome, it says, in form and appearance. The young man was a good-looking young man. And she desired him. And she tempted him over and over again. Verses 7, she had longing eyes on him. And she said, lie with me. And in verse 10, she spoke to him day by day. You know, think about this. And it's been said many times about this young man. And I know many of you have heard this before, but it needs to be repeated. He is not at his home anymore. What would God know? Who cares? Why not? I'm away from my family. Nobody's going to know. I mean, look, what am I going to do? It's my master's wife. Right? That's reasoning. That's human reasoning. That's thinking it through and thinking, okay, it's just this one time. It won't matter. Right? I mean, look, everybody does it. It's not a bad thing. He said no. And in verse 8 and 9, he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? What an amazing man. What scripture did he turn to for that? Did he say, let's turn over to and let me show you? Did he say, you know, I'm just thinking this through, and really, I mean, you know, no. No, if he'd thought it through as a human, this wouldn't have happened. When he continues to resist her, continues day by day resisting her, she wrongfully accuses him. She reaches to grab him, and she gets his coat, his tunic, and he runs from her because he does not want to be in this situation. He does what Paul told Timothy, flee fornication. He flees. He runs away. He says, I don't want this. She holds it, and she lies about him. And she accuses him of trying to take her by force. And her husband, of course, listens to her. She lies about it. She lies about this good young man. This man who has turned this household around, made it being blessed by God, and he's angry. And rightfully so. You can understand why he'd be angry if he thought and believed in his wife. And so what happens? Well, Joseph's in prison. This is not one of those where there's a trial and the witnesses are brought forth. He's just put in Pharaoh's prison. Potiphar's a powerful man. He just takes him and puts him in prison. And now we find, wouldn't you be very discouraged at this point? Wouldn't you think, wow, this is, how bad can this get? What have I done to deserve it? Isn't that what we think? Not him. Here he is in prison and he finds favor again with God's help. Worst circumstances you can think of. I mean, I can't think of anything much worse than could you being in prison with a bunch of hardened criminals, people that aren't necessarily the best in the world, and here I am with them. But I tell you what happened. Over time, remember, this is going to be a space of time, and we're looking at 12 years here. Here he is, he's in prison, and all the prisoners are committed to his hand. Now, this didn't happen overnight. This is not a short period of time. This is not 3 weeks and things are fine with him. This is going to be about a 12-year period that he's going through these things. And he again prospers with God's help. We see in 39:23, the keeper of the prison did not look at anything that was under Joseph's hands because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. They trusted him explicitly. The prison guards, the keeper of the prison, knew that he could trust Joseph. He knew that Joseph would not. How could he know that? Joseph proved it with his life. Just like any of us, there are people you trust and there are people you don't trust. Why? You know them. With God's help, though, he's able to interpret dreams. He didn't, remember he had his own dreams, and he didn't really put an interpretation on that other than he thought this is what it meant, and they thought that's what he was trying to say, and so they don't know if he had them or not, and they're just upset with him. But now, the butler and the baker come to him. And they both tell this story. You know, I was the chief butler. I was the chief baker. Pharaoh had me in his house. I was working there. Things were well. And then I got accused of things. And so they have these dreams, and they come and tell him the dreams. And I won't go into the dreams. I'll just ask you to read those on your own. But the chief butler's dream, turns out in 3 days, things were going to work out well for him. The chief butler, not so good. I said it wrong. Chief butler was going to. The chief baker wasn't going to work out too good. In 3 days, he's going to lose his head. Major difference. He tells them the truth. He tells them what God revealed to him. He doesn't hold it back. So you'd think that the chief butler would be very happy about this, and he would have thought about it frequently and thought, this wonderful young man told me what was going to happen to me. Not so. 2 years pass. Well, I want to say this about him. In all of this, it amazes me every time he gives God the glory. He doesn't say, this is me. It's God. In 40 verse 8, he says, we each have dreamed a dream. God said, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. He said, basically, God will give it. I can't. But he knew God was with him. Even though his interpretations are fulfilled exactly like he said, Joseph is forgotten. Here he is. He's a wonderful young man, and things are going well. 2 years pass. Two more years in prison. So that would have been from the time he was roughly 28 and 29 years old. Think about this. For 17 years he'd had freedom. And then from about that time to this time, he's either been in serving someone's household or been in prison. Your best years. How many people would like to spend their 20s either serving someone without freedom or in prison? Most people consider those the best years of their life. The 2 years pass, Pharaoh has a dream. Now he doesn't say in this, you know, when the chief butler remembers the Joseph and he says, hey, I know this man. He can tell you because God had given him this ability to do so. Sure enough, in verse 16 of chapter 41, Joseph answered Pharaoh saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. In verse 25, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. In verse 32, and the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice because this thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. That's an amazing faith. That's a faith that says, it's not only God giving you this dream, but he's telling you about the future, Pharaoh. And then, as a result, I'm going to tell you what it means. And he talks about, certainly, the 7 years of good and the 7 years of bad. He talks about the heads of the, about the cows, and how these 7 skinny cows eat these 7 fat cows, and how that's all going to happen. And then how you have these 7 heads of on one stalk, full and good, and the 7 heads withered up, and the withered ones devour the good ones. And of course, the dream is about 7 years of good and 7 years of bad. But he not only interprets the dream, but let me tell you something. Here's a young man who's been in prison. Here's a young man who spent a lot of time doing the best that he can to make the best of every situation. Here's a young man who says, you know, I'm not only going to tell you about the dream, but let me give you some advice. I have some wisdom on this. You need to think this through. You need to understand that there's going to be 7 years of good and 7 years of famine. So my advice to you is you better start preparing for the bad now. Don't wait. That's great advice. Think about the future. You know, think about what you need to be prepared for. And the Bible talks about that quite a bit, about how we need to prepare. So as we look at this, we can certainly see that Joseph is a wonderful young man, and I want to quickly go into one other thing before we finish this morning. At 30, he's made second in command. He is told by Pharaoh that you will be under me, and no one else will be between us. At 30 years old, finally, things are looking up. Only Pharaoh would be greater than him. He not only did that, but he gave him his signet ring where he could actually stamp things and say it came from Pharaoh. That's powerful. I don't think we understand how powerful the Pharaohs were. If they said, you die, you die. I've said this over and over again. This isn't like the President of the United States. It was instantaneous. Tremendous power. He gave him the best clothing and jewelry in 42 of 41. He rode in the second chariot behind Pharaoh in verse 43. And they would cry out, bow the knee. In other words, you show some honor to this man. He is somebody. Think about this. Just a few days before, he'd been in jail. How many people does that happen to? Comes out of jail and is made second in command. Why? Because of God. And because of His faithfulness to God. And I'll tell you something. He had planned ahead. He was a wise ruler. He planned ahead. If not for him, they may not have done this. And he thought about this in the good times. And you know what he did? He gathered up. And you know what it says? In verse 47, now the seven plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt, laid up the food in the cities. He laid it up in every city, the flood of the fields which surrounded them. And Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was without number. He was blessed to have the wisdom to do this. I think of the waste in this country. Never preparing for the future. Never thinking about it. Never even desiring anything else. It's going to be great from now on, not understanding. He knew this. And he exercised the wisdom during the bad times as well. During the famine, let me tell you what he did. And I've got the verses up there. 41, 50 through 57 and 47, 13 through 16. First, he took care of the Egyptians. Second, other countries came. He had prepared so much. And when they had the famine, they were able to help take care of them as well and feed them. He exchanged, though, this food, this is wisdom, for money, later on for livestock, and then later on for land. Because as they were losing things and got rid of their money, you know what he was doing? He was taking care of the Pharaoh. Who made him second command? Well, God did. But the Pharaoh. He was honoring that Pharaoh. All of this was being turned over to the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh was getting tremendous power through Joseph's help. Lastly, then, he would give them seed for the promise of one-fifth of all they would produce. He said, come, I'll give you this seed. Now that things are better, you can start planting again. But here's the thing. You owe one-fifth of it. You talk about a wise ruler. He knew what to do. And you know how thankful they were to him? They praised him over and over and over again. Because you know what they understood and knew? They would have died without Joseph. But more importantly, he was making it clear they would have died without God. When we think about this, we need to understand something. And I want to point out one other thing. All through this, I want to tell you about his gratefulness to God. He didn't get angry with God over his misfortunes. You find in 41, 38, and 39, he gave God the credit and the glory. I want to turn to 41 to end this first session. 41:51. Joseph called the name of his firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Think about this. Named his sons, glorifying God. For 17 years he'd had a good life. None of things weren't so good. But through it all, he glorified and praised God. You know, the beautiful thing about what God has did for him and what he's done for us is, he made Joseph, if you will, he saved Joseph himself, but he made him a savior. He made him one that saved the people. They would have starved to death without the intervention of God through Joseph. Just like that, if we did not have Jesus Christ, spiritually, we'd all be dead. We would have had no hope, and as Gentiles, we would have been without God in this world. But He sent His Son as a deliverer. And when I look at Christ's life and how He was treated, Joseph was treated much better. Christ wasn't treated so well. The difference between the two is that I'm sure Joseph was deserving of some things that happened to him. Christ was deserving of nothing bad that ever happened to him. He did it because of us. He died on that cross for our sins. And he said, in return, all I need you to do is obey my will. If we have any today that need to be obedient to the will of God, we're going to stand and sing a song, and we would ask you to please let us know, and we certainly would be pleased to assist you in any way we can. Would you please stand?